ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
You ever watch the news and think, whoa, this seems...
unprecedented?
Unprecedented.
It's unprecedented.
This has never happened before. This is unprecedented.
I'm Matt Bevan, and my show, if you're listening, is about finding times that what's happening now has happened before and figuring out what we can learn from it. Learning from history. I mean, who could imagine? New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
A deal on the Albanese government's gambling bill is in its final stages, with the Prime Minister and opposition leader set to hold further talks today. Negotiations on Labor's NDIS changes and news bargaining incentive are also close to being inked, with the coalition effectively dealing the Greens out of the talks. And while Japan dismissed the PM's podcast Melon Gaff as sensationalised in a formal letter, domestic politicians have been less forgiving. Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm Raf Epstein from 774 ABC Radio in Melbourne.
Raf, happy Census Day.
Oh, very excited. Very excited. Filling in the form. It's been a big event at my place.
Well, it is a big event and it's every 5 years, huge moment, I think, for people to see how much the country's changed. We're going to get into all of that. And there's also the new AI Royal Commission and the latest part of the PM Melongate saga. So we'll bring you all of that shortly. But first, Parliament is officially back today. Politicians had some meetings yesterday, which is the Monday, but the official first, you know, question time is today. It's after the midwinter break, and that's a big time, big reset, big sort of... Also, lots of politicians are in Europe. I won't lie to you. I saw their pictures. So, you know, I understand. Europe's a good place. What's not to like? Labor is closing in on a deal on its gambling bill. Anthony Albanese and Angus Taylor held talks yesterday. But what I think is really interesting, I just came back from a bit of a sort of coalition party room debrief. And it seems to me, Raf, that they are actually split right almost in the middle. And I say almost because there were kind of almost five and four voices, five, I think, raising that they need to strengthen the bill and push for more. Others saying, no, we need to get the balance right, don't push too hard because people are worried about the gambling industry and its sustainability. And, you know, there's that libertarian view, of course, among right-wing politicians in the coalition who think, okay, like people should have a punt, let's not over-police this industry. So I just got the sense at the end of that briefing that it may be not such a done deal, Raf. I feel like there's a big Barney still going on in the coalition.
I think there's still a bit of a Barney going on inside the Labor Party, notwithstanding what you and Jacob were talking about, the PM's ascendancy. It's interesting to know that you picked up that from the coalition. What I have picked up from Labor is, like, I'd read and heard that there was going to be some movement on the advertising. I am picking up absolutely no movement on the advertising ban. Significant movement on inducements, and that's sort of worth signalling out and putting in a box. I'm getting told that Labor and the coalition agree on, so you don't get the extra payment for depositing the money into the account. You won't get the extra bet if you sign up. Also, you'll be kept away from the extra bets and the free bets. If you opt into BetStop and then you fall off the wagon, so to speak, it'll be longer before you get those sort of bonus bets. But I very much get the sense that it's a moving feast. This has all been thrown into one big basket, that Angus Taylor and Anthony Albanese are somehow going to come to agreement on even broader things like the NDIS as well. I don't think it's a done deal at all. But what I did get, I'd be curious to know what you got, very little movement on advertising, and the using the cover of the changed resolution at ALP conference to move on inducements. I don't know how much that matters to the betting companies. I don't think it's of primary concern to them. So no. I think that maybe is why the government's willing to give ground there. I don't know. What are you picking up?
Yeah, I think inducements is low-hanging fruit. It's easy for them to move on inducements. I don't think it's politically tricky. And same for Angus Taylor. He can say to parts of his party room that is concerned about gambling, oh, we're moved on that though. I agree with you on that issue of whether you have to opt in to get the advertising,
oh my Lord.
And how many would opt in? probably not that many of us. Oh, I'd like to opt in to see more gambling propaganda, please.
And also keep in mind, when you opt out at the moment, when you're on Betstop at the moment, you still get the ads. I've had heaps of people contact me on my show in Melbourne saying, I opted out, I'm part of Betstop, I still get the ads, dozens of them.
How?
Apparently social media is hard to regulate, PK.
Yeah, who would have thought it? So on that issue, we even had John Howard intervene, former Prime Minister, saying, you know, they need to do a deal on that element. And I'm not seeing a deal on that element. Now, I don't know if people like Simon Kennedy, who's a Liberal backbencher, is really pushing for stronger action on gambling, are going to just sort of take that. I think that Angus Taylor might face a bit of pressure. And the Labor backbench maybe is a little more passionate than it used to be as well, as people are positioning, realising that, you know, sitting and sort of being quiet all the time is not necessarily useful to your overall cause.
Can we go to the internal Labor stuff then? Because firstly, I was pretty astonished. So last Friday morning, I had a chat to the Labor MP from Adelaide, who's the chair of that parliamentary committee, and she was saying, you know, there's building strength in caucus for real big change. I don't remember the last time I've had a Labor MP on to say there's a big movement for change inside the caucus and we disagree with the Prime Minister. So I do think that's actually, that's bigger and more dissent than we've seen. You know, we saw Ed Husic, he was an outlier as a dissenter when it came to things like Gaza and AUKUS. I don't think the three Labor MPs so far who've made noise are seen as outliers. I think they are seen as mainstream. But the converse to that, and again, I want to know from you, PK, people at the top of government, so the decision makers, people in cabinet, I actually had one of them say to me, you know, you at the ABC, you always want to bloody talk about the gambling. How many people raise it in a focus group? And this is a quote, effing no one. So that's from someone at the, you know, inside federal government, close to those people making all of the decisions. So I do think there's more dissent there. There's more disagreement within all of the people elected to represent Labor than I've seen in the past, or at least that we are being allowed to see. And I think that actually makes the conversations with Angus Taylor even more complicated. I think it's very much a watch this space.
But the one thing you must remember is even if they're speaking out, they still have the discipline to lock in when a decision is made.
Oh, sure.
It would be very unusual. I mean, and it might happen because it hasn't happened yet, so I don't know. But it would be very unusual for it to be a subsequent problem for the Prime Minister in terms of, you know, people leaking and speaking out. There is still a lot of discipline, I think.
There is, but they must get the feedback. Like, I get tons of emails, calls and texts about it, and it's not always the case that, you know, media gets the same feedback that MPs get. But I know I've spoken to Coalition MPs and Greens MPs. They get feedback about gambling all the time. So it does still surprise me that the government isn't willing to shift.
And you know where it's a huge issue and the next generation of voters, sort of younger people. Like in those cohorts, there is...
because it's all their mates having their lives ruined.
It is. And they see it and they're educated on it. I'm thinking about my 17-year-old daughter. Like she talks about it all the time. It's like a big sort of...
because it happens at schools. Issue. Like all the teachers will tell you, the year 12, year 11 boys, they're betting at school on apps they're not supposed to bet on. Yeah. And they're gambling while they're at school.
Correct. Yes, and that's why it is actually quite a big issue. Anyway, let's park that. Let's see where they land. But I agree with you. There's that, you know, I feel like the leaders are kind of trying to lock in to subdue both their backbenches in some ways.
Right? Can I just push back at you in one sense, because you wanted to park it, which I agree. But I don't know if you noticed the results came out for Kerry Stokes Media Company today. They are suffering, right? And their TV revenues are suffering. That is who I think the government and maybe even Angus Taylor are thinking about and talking to. They still think the TV stations are a big part of, you know, the way that politics gets reported. They're suffering in TV revenues. That's the reason, isn't it, that they're not willing to shift on the ad ban?
Yeah, I think the actual sustainability of these industries that have been shedding jobs for a long time and the business models being basically disrupted in the most intense way, both of us have seen it in our career, sort of hordes of our friends, to be honest, losing their jobs over the years. So it is a big issue, and they are hearing that. And I personally think even if they think this stems it's only ever like a little band-aid that keeps it going for a little longer. Like, I think AI and digital revolution has, you know, spoken. So it's a bigger problem. But yeah, let's park just to sort of say that the PM told caucus he was getting the balance right. He used all of that language again. Let's see where it sort of lands. They had discussions around NDIS changes and news bargaining incentive too. There is a view that there might be a bigger play, that it's all sort of landed. Is that sort of where you think it's going?
I don't know. I'm not trusting resolution.
No.
The One Nation presence in the polls, like, that's in their brains as well, right? Yeah. It's in Labor brains and Liberal and National brains. So I'm less sure. This is not, kids, you'll remember when Brian Harradine was the sole voice that John Howard had to persuade. This is not that sort of negotiation, is it? It's very, very different.
It is. All right, let's get to a topic that, look, I won't lie, I was, you know, I'm conflicted about this topic because I feel like, how much can we talk about that podcast and that melon reference? But I'm only conflicted because I think it's a sad state of the world that it even happened originally. So no defence from me. The so-called Melongate episode. Quick recap for those who haven't been playing at home. Albanese made a gesture in front of his chest while discussing the melons the Japanese Prime Minister had given him as a gift on a podcast. Please watch it and make your own mind up, because I don't think the opinions of anyone matter so much as you watch it, you make your own mind up. That's the thing. It's there. I was just saying in the newsroom, actually, to a lot of our colleagues, like, it's actually a really simple one. If people are going to have a fight about it, just send them the vision and they can just make up their own minds. Because,
well, can I just, so I did go back and look at it this morning.
Yes, so did I, about 10 times.
So it's a perfect Rorschach test, right? Because some of those stills of the PM, I'm going to get a little bit anatomical here, forgive me, but a lot of those stills of the PM have him with his hands pointing towards his chest, which is, of course, leaning
where
towards
his boobs
the
would be.
Right.
Sorry, however, no one has to say it.
You can say that. When he makes the comment, his palms are actually facing each other. So it is a bit of a Rorschach test. It is, I think it is something that is in the eye of the beholder. But can I just say two things? Firstly, let's acknowledge what the gift was and acknowledge it's a symbol of not just Japanese trade, but this extraordinary food culture that is a part of Japanese culture. They are crown melons from Shinzuoka. They are the most prized melons in Japan. They are worth more than a bottle of wine. So this is a delicacy, and it speaks to something deeper.
Have you eaten one?
Oh, no, I haven't. I think that I looked up the price. I was trying to convert. I think they're literally, they're some of them are worth $260, $260 a pop.
You're not fancy enough.
I'm clearly not fancy enough. But it's worth saying, I'm making that point about Japanese culture because the more that we talk about this, I think the less this is about offending the Japanese or damaging the trade relationship. I don't think it is about the relationship between Japan and Australia. It's worth pointing out the exchange of letters that has happened between the Australian and Japanese governments, between the leaders, since the Japanese Prime Minister Sane Takeuchi came to Australia. So I think the relationship's fine. I think the ambassador as well, who wrote the article in the Australian newspaper at the start of the week, like, he's got a record of being pretty controversial, including telling off the BBC, when the BBC, by the way, pointed out that Japan hasn't acknowledged the atrocities committed in World War II. He called that BBC reporter ignorant and self-righteous and said it was punitive lecturing. So the person who sort of kicked off this round of the debate it's worth putting that into perspective. However, when it comes to the way our politicians talk and how we perceive the way they talk, especially when it comes to the entrenched misogyny in our culture, where it's a stretch is when Katie Gallagher was on RN Breakfast, and she did other media this morning, ABC TV, ABC Radio, other things, when she said, the PM says the podcast comments have been misreported and misinterpreted, I accept his assurance on that. She's not engaging with the tenor of the comments. I thought you did yourself a lot of credit by pointing out that when this first broke, you were hosting Insiders and you mentioned it on the day. It sort of got subsumed by the comments about Kylie Minogue. There's no question that he went too far in the podcast. There's no question that if he could have those comments back, he would take them back. I don't know how much it's worth talking about. I don't know how much I think the Coalition is genuine in their outrage.
This
what do you think?
This is the bit that I think is worth talking about. I think clearly, you know, is it the biggest diplomatic incident with Japan? No, not the biggest. But some people thought it was a bit crass on the Japanese side, right? Including the former ambassador. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just trying to you know, just sort of pull back. At the time where you're right, I mentioned in our Insiders episode where I was hosting while David was on holidays, right? I mentioned, and Jacob and I just bonded about this actually, and we went into it together, right? Like I ask him and we're like talking and we emphasise that, and we play that part of it, that this is the part that if anything is really quite contentious because this is a female leader of a big country that we are trying to build even stronger relationship with, right? And, you know, some respect didn't seem right. At the time, Jacob, I've checked this with him and I can say for myself, we didn't get any, no one contested this from any senior position.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, no, I think that's important. No one called me and I'm good at not missing my calls or calling people back and said, Patricia, the melons thing you were saying, that, you know, right? No, now, even if they had, by the way, I'd still go, well, people can make their own mind and I'd still make the argument. Don't get me wrong. But I'm saying, why now, all of a sudden, is there the pushback we're seeing? Well, because it has gone into the international zone. So in Australia, I think the Prime Minister's office and stuff was like, all right, we're going to have to suck it up. He made the unequivocal apology, which he did. He did. And unequivocal is I thought about everything, by the way, including maybe that.
So you're saying the unequivocal apology at the time, which might have been interpreted as about Kylie Minogue.
I didn't think it was just about Kylie Minogue. I thought it was about the whole thing. Like right, the whole, right. Any sort of, that's what I, please correct me and I'll take a call. But so if they're not contesting it then, there has been some contesting now, certainly publicly, as you say from Katie, that's not how we interpret it. So, okay, let's trust that that's not how he thinks he intended it. Let's believe that he did not intend it that way. I don't intend to sometimes, I don't know, be rude or patronise people, but if they tell me that I have, I review it and say, sorry, I did not mean it that way, but I accept that that's how you heard it. Like that's life, isn't it, Raph? You have to kind of accept the consequence.
The Japanese Prime Minister is not going to say that. And actually my understanding too, now that we know it came up in formal diplomatic correspondence between Japan and Australia, they were actually saying, hey, we're noting this because it's been mentioned, but we don't think it's significant. So the only wrinkle in what you're saying, PK, of course, like if I offend you, then I'm genuinely sorry. The thing is, the person who the crass remarks were made about being the Japanese Prime Minister, Sanae Takeuchi, she's not going to say something. So it does complicate issues. And also it's brought up in a newspaper that is not friendly to the government
by
an ambassador who's not friendly to the government.
That's
so
right.
they're all important wrinkles.
All must be mentioned. I agree with you. However, all of this is true. That's why it's a complex issue.
Yes.
But I think to also rely on this argument that, well, Japan hasn't formally apologised and they say it's fine.
Sure.
Well, as if they would. That is not how diplomacy works. Like, we just don't do that. How
That's
often,
true.
I'll give you the perfect example on the other end about us. You know, we've had prime ministers criticised by Trump. They've all had to suck it up publicly, haven't they? Not tell you how they really feel. That's the way it works. You have to, in the world of diplomacy, suck it up, baby. And that's what's happened here. She and the Japanese have gone, whatever, like, what it was, if we're going to make a big deal of this. It doesn't mean it's not a bad moment, though, and the government just has to suck it up. And I wouldn't be spending too much time contesting whether it is or not because, as I say, people watch it. They're coming to a judgment even if he did not intend it that way. That's how it looked.
I just want to work out how I can insert the phrase, suck it up, baby, and get that included in the podcast as well. So I've done that. I think what I've learned very much from hosting Talkback Radio for I don't know how many years now, 15 years or something, things that seem really minor, things that seem really trivial, they actually reveal a lot about how we really feel about the world. And maybe they also, some trivial things really reveal a lot about the world as it is. The fact is that the PM wouldn't get into this trouble if Japan had a male leader. Japan's got a female leader. She cops a fair bit of criticism from what I can pick up. I was reading up on this overnight. She is criticised by a lot of women and feminists in Japan for not picking up their causes, which is, again, something unique to the fact that she is a female leader of Japan. He wouldn't be in this place if Japan's prime minister wasn't a woman. He wouldn't be in this place if he hadn't made a mistake going on the podcast. It does reveal...
Yes.
Some of the casual language
yes.
we can all fall into
yes.
and the sort of mistakes we can all make. I do think it's not really an issue to do with our relationship with Japan. I'm totally fine with it being an issue about, oh, hang on, let's run a really tough ruler over the way our leaders talk about people in the community, because that's a way that we can all learn how we should all talk about each other. I'm happy with that. I think the government's a bit pissed off that it's an issue. But I think they're great. I mean, it's a terrible cliche, you know, sort of teachable moment. But it's true. It's good. If we all think once or twice before we open our mouths, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, and look, it's so obvious what's happening here. You know, he's speaking to a female host as well. That kind of creates a permission structure, doesn't it?
That's true.
Like, it's different because just in terms of context, you know, people from a particular group can say things that others can't.
But there's a universal rule, PK. Mm. Men of my age, white men of my age, and the Prime Minister's age, steer clear of these conversations. One wants to hear it.
Yeah.
No one wants to hear it.
I'll just say, we don't want you to hear you talking about melons, boobs. Even if you don't think you were talking about boobs, I don't care. Just avoid it.
I still haven't said that word.
No, it's funny because I'm not going there. Baiting you.
Good luck.
Okay.
Have you lost track? You've lost track.
Oh, no, I'm never, never.
Okay.
I am a woman on message, and here's the message.
Okay. Yeah.
Outside of the Canberra bubble, I'm just being silly. South Australia, they announced a royal commission into artificial intelligence. That Peter Malinauskas, that guy loves to lead the national conversation. I'll give you two examples, people. A couple, actually, even more than two, but I'll go with two. The first one being social media. He was the one. He went on the Rest is Politics podcast, you know, with some famous British men, as you may know.
Oh,
it's
yes.
almost as popular as ours.
Our friend Peter Malinauskas, Alistair and Rory
friend,
love to say.
And he was like the leader of banning young people from social media. And then Albo follows, but it's really follows, right? And, of course, doesn't. And he thinks it's his idea. But really, Malinauskas had put it on the table. Now Malinauskas has announced an AI royal commission. I'm going to give credit to my producer on Afternoon Briefing, because he said to me a little earlier, it's like having a royal commission back in the day into the internet. Can you imagine? I was like, God, that's why Josh is so good. And it is in some ways. Now, and I said to Josh as a counter, just to tell you how this sausage is made as I make form views, I was like, maybe we should have had a royal commission into the internet. Look how the internet has done all sorts of horrendous things to us and wonderful things for us. That's the thing, right? There is a contradiction. Okay, so Malinauskas does this. I reckon it's so much about Malinauskas and his play for federal power one day, for being the sort of handsome, up-and-coming, smart, sharp, rock star leader that might be one day a federal player, but also he cares about our AI. I'm going to be very fair here. He's just come back from the US. I reckon people have said things to him that have absolutely freaked him out about the future.
What did he say? He'd been there for 3 days on the ground, and within 3 days he thought, right, we need to do a royal commission.
Broke his brain. Like, it broke his brain. So he's come back. This is very urgent. We've got to do this. Rah, rah, rah. They've announced the Royal Commission. I find it a bit odd, though, because federally you need, I mean, the whole world needs to look at this, right? But at least it has to be a national project. What do you think? Good? Bad?
I'm very skeptical about royal commissions that are not about specific problems. Coming from a state that's had royal commissions into mental health, royal commissions into family violence, and we've just announced a royal commission into a much more specific, much easier to track problem being corruption in the construction industry. I actually think the lesson of royal commissions past is that we won't get too much out of this. And I can even point to South Australia. When they did a royal commission into the prospect of nuclear power some years ago in South Australia, one of the findings from that royal commission was that not only should nuclear waste be stored permanently in South Australia, but that South Australia should be importing nuclear waste from around the world. Now, that's fine if that's your opinion, but I don't know that that's what royal commissions are good at understanding and defining and coming up with answers for. Big, broad, complex problems, I don't think fit well with royal commissions. I'm all for good ideas. There is no doubt that, you know, to go to what Peter Malinauskas, or to the reason Peter Malinauskas is doing this, I think one way of assessing how big the data center and the AI issues are, there's no more fractious polity in the world than American politics. Like, Republicans and Democrats disagree on absolutely everything. There are only two things Democrats and Republicans agree on. One is being hawkish on China. Two is data centers. So these are huge issues having ramifications across partisan lines. They don't follow party political lines. In Victoria, we've got the Greens who want a moratorium on data centers. New York State has stopped building them for a year because they cause so much concern. So Malinauskas is right to address people's concerns. A royal commission, governments make decisions. Governments have to make hard decisions. Is anyone in South Australia going to be able to say, I don't want a data center in my neighborhood? Is anyone in South Australia going to be able to hold an AI agent liable if they suffer harm or their kid suffers harm? Governments have to make those decisions. I just don't see where a royal commission does something any more efficiently than just ask your public servants, ask industry. Malinauskas is the guy who's elected. Malinauskas is the guy with a massive margin. Make a decision.
I've got mixed feelings. I'm not a big fan of royal commissions. I mean, I had Andrew Hastie on. He said, like, get a sort of select expert sort of parliamentary group that looks at this area.
Yeah. Do some inquiries and those things. They're good. But yeah. Politicians have to, they need to make decisions. And I actually think there's too much fear around AI and data centers. There aren't partisan lines on this stuff. It isn't a simple, you know, pro-business or pro-person dividing line. I think actually the politicians in our state and federal parliaments would find they agree on a lot of this stuff. But maybe that's the way South Australia comes towards an answer.
I think so, and I think it's a Malinauskas trick. I think it's kind of the way he rolls, and it certainly puts him on the national scene, and that's important. Look, just finally, we said we'd talk about this, and we will, because today is Census Day. Woo-hoo. And it helps the government make decisions about things like health and transport and schools and infrastructure. It helps, I suppose, policymakers, and I think this is key, know where the people are with certain kind of maybe vulnerabilities or issues to kind of focus their attention. I think that's a good thing. I've always thought it's a good thing. I also think it's really important to understand your country. So, you know, when it comes to religion or when it comes to different cultural groups in this country and understanding, oh, there are a lot of Indian people that live in this part of, what does that mean in terms of language services or the way we might need to, you know, do that? Or, geez, there's a lot of, gays in Marrickville, you know what I mean? Like, hi, gays in Marrickville. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of really interesting data that gets found out, and I'm very excited
about it. Okay, so Patricia Karvelas, can I prosecute a point?
Oh, you just want to have a fight with me. Go.
So you think it's important, right? You said yesterday with Jacob that it's up there with referendums and elections, right?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's what you said. I love a bit of an exaggeration.
That's what you said?
Yeah.
But you're not a doer. You're a talker. You don't fill in the form. You don't fill in the form.
Yeah, because I can't sit still. You know I'm undiagnosed for things, clearly. Sit still.
I was shocked to hear this. Go back, listen to Monday's episode of Politics Now. Because can I tell you, Patricia, firstly, big tribute to my dear departed dad. One of my core childhood memories is my dad would always make a cup of tea, cut up an apple really beautifully and nicely. You know, probably cut up one of those Japanese expensive melons if he could, if he came back from the dead. He would sit down. And he often sat me or my sister there and said, right, let's answer these census questions together. Yes. So in that spirit, and possibly because of that, there was never any argument in my household that I was going to be the census filler innerer. Yeah. And just to go to the, so firstly, I'm going to mark you down a bit. I just want you to know
mark
for not being the doer in the household. But if I can just address some of the questions, I'm always fascinated by some of the questions that are included and aren't included. Less importantly, there's always a bit of an issue around Christian denominations.
Yes.
Because there aren't enough Jews in Australia, we don't get listed. But you can, of course, write Jewish in there. I would love to know, just as a personal proclivity of mine, you can be many different sorts of Jew. You can be a cultural Jew, a progressive Jew, a reformed Jew, a conservative Jew, an ultra-Orthodox Jew. Yeah. I would love them to count that. They don't count that stuff. So there's lots of things that could be counted in the census that aren't counted, but there are specifically questions. It raised a smile when I, because I filled my form in last night, to fill in straight, tick. There was just something delightfully colloquial about that. I was really glad it wasn't something as anodyne and bureaucratic as heterosexual. But that question and those sorts of questions,
yeah, they use the word straight,
something
didn't
really
they?
Important. Yeah, I love it. It's just,
do you
it's
like
such,
it?
Well, I love it because it's regular language. It's normal
language. So you think people
language.
Will know what that means? Will everyone?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I wonder, actually.
It's counting a good thing, though. Like this shift around counting sexuality and gender.
What else did you tick?
Well, I did the right thing. And I think it's one of the great things about the census. I knew what my child's answer was to that question, but I was the one filling in. So I thought, so what would you like to put? For your, do you want to be straight? Do you want to be something else?
It's just you.
Well, it's just very, like, it encourages a good, positive, open conversation.
Oh, my kids
cancel what the answer
me if
was
I
gonna...
ask them those questions. They're like, you are so annoying. Mum, you're so and 90s. So,
it collects crucial information because people are more visible.
Yes.
Also worth pointing, so that's really important around issues of sexuality and gender. I also found it really interesting. There's no, quote unquote, Chinese category. And I know that's, I think the ABS explanation is they're very keen to know because, of course, Chinese is more than one place and one geography. Yeah. And I think the formal explanation there is, hey, you might be, your roots might be Hong Kong, Macau, elsewhere.
Yeah.
The ABS get, the Australian Bureau of Statistics cop a lot of flack for the questions they do ask and the questions they don't ask.
And remember the controversy, I'm surprised people have forgotten, but I'll remind you, over this particular census, because remember Albanese had intervened.
That's right.
Thank you. I got a good memory, which is why I work in this business. He intervened. Remember when Andrew Leigh was politely trying to go forward with some of the LGBTIQ stuff.
That's right.
And the trans issue and how to sort of deal with that prickly one, because Albanese didn't want to look like he was kind of being too woke in what they allowed to be in the survey. And then they kind of came to a settlement that I think the LGBTIQ plus community feels broadly okay about. I say broadly because I'm sure there's some criticism I'm going to get smashed, but I've seen members of the community sort of say this is a really important moment. I've got to say, and I said it yesterday, but I'll say it again because it is important, very important for families like mine where we haven't really known just how many same-sex families, the number of children, all of that sort of stuff exists. And there are a lot of us now increasingly. It'll be interesting to see how many of us, just changes in for the formulation of families and the way that, our kids and stuff are kind of integrated too. Like there is a complexity to different family structures and we get to recognise it, right? Like all of these things influence the way professionals and policy is made. Am I right, Ralph, or am I being a bit daggy? Am I a dag?
No, I don't think you're being daggy at all. And I think it applies across lots of different areas of life. For the Indigenous community, it's no conversations about us without us. For people in regional Australia, they want to acknowledge that you need localised, specialised solutions for people who live in far less populous cities and towns. Whenever you're talking about a community or to a community, you need to know more about that community. I mean, and that's why it really is, other than, and I am 100% on the same page as you, other than a state and federal election or a referendum or even a postal survey, it's an amazing exercise that we get to participate in our democracy. Doesn't mean governments and politicians will make the right decisions, but at least they're making decisions based on better information.
Yeah.
And they can only get that information if we give it to them, which is why I sat down and relished filling in my census, which is why someone should chain you to a table at home and make you fill
in yours. It's funny, I have to correct the record. When I was growing up, especially I can remember one particular census at my grandparents' house, because I grew up and I'm an orphan. I lived in different houses. I lived with my grandparents who didn't know any English, and I had to fill it out. I mean, my grandmother's illiterate. My grandmother couldn't even write in Greek, let alone in English. Mm. And so I always feel – so maybe I'm a bit – like there's a bit of a joke in my new family, the one I made, about me being fatigued by some of these jobs too, right?
Yeah.
Like, but I can talk about it ad nauseum, and here you are listening to me. That's it for the party room today. Raf, thank you so much for joining me.
Always a pleasure, PK.
David Spears will join me on the podcast tomorrow for the latest developments. And if you have a question for us, please send a short voice note to thepartyroom@abc.net.au and Fran and I will endeavour to answer it. See you, Raf.
See you later.